Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, all my listeners here. This is the return of Dirty South, the Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith. We've been taking a little time off of the show, trying to make the show a little bit better, trying to get some more time in, this, that, and the other. One of the things I want to start off talking about is that, you know, while we was off the air, we had several different events taking place that I really wish that we would have been on the air for. One of those is Ferguson. The other one is the emergence of ISIS as a threat. We also have had some wonderful developments taking place in the political races here in Georgia. And then also at the end of the show, I want to talk about some ideas I have for a new format going forward. So let me go ahead and let's jump into some of the things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks while I've been off the air. One, let's talk about Ferguson. A lot of people been listening to the developing stories going back and forth, and now that all the rioting is over with, it seems like the national attention is going away. But we don't need to let the attention ride from Ferguson. Ferguson is such a much larger problem than just the shooting of Michael Brown. It was just one of those tipping points that we reach in America every once in a while that makes us refocus our attention on the thing that is really, really plaguing our nation, race being a major issue. Now, a lot of people say, well, it's not about race. It's about the overreaching hand of government. Well, again, when the hand of the government overreaches, sometimes there's a racial motivation behind it. I know as a black man that every time I see a policeman, my heart starts to beat a little faster. I know that when I see a policeman, he gets behind me. I get nervous. If I'm walking down the street and I encounter a policeman, I get nervous. And I am by no means a thug. I'm not a criminal. I don't match any of those things that always come up after in an incident takes place where the police have harassed a black man. But why, you ask? Why would I get nervous if I did nothing wrong? Why would I have anxiety? It's because I've been conditioned that way, and I can tell you from personal experience that that's the truth. I can go back to a story when I was about 14 or 15 years old, growing up in South DeKalb, and I was sitting there waiting on the bus by the Burger King on Candler Road. And for y'all who are familiar with South DeKalb, in the late 80s, early 90s, the 74 flash holes, take his little turn around up in that way. I'm sitting there getting a bus. I'm transferring buses from the 86 Lithonia. And I'm sitting there with a group of my friends. We just come home from school. And an altercation had just taken place outside of this Burger King. And the police came on board the MARTA bus and grabbed me. Said, you're under arrest. I'm like, what for? I ain't did nothing. Well, you just stole this kid's Walkman over here. I stole no Walkman. So I'm sitting in the back of the police car. All my friends are telling the police I didn't steal this Walkman. Finally, they get the kid whose Walkman was stolen from them and said, no, that's not him. That kid was light-skinned. And anybody who knows me knows that I'm on the darker end of the persuasion. So how did it come? The only thing that was similar to us is that we was wearing the same type of jacket. I was wearing a Raiders jacket, and that young man had been wearing a Raiders jacket, too. But under no circumstances did anybody ever take and say, let's look at the kid's skin color. Let's look at, did anybody know his name? You had a bunch of people sitting there, but I'm sitting in the back of the police car getting yelled at and getting threatened to get hit. That if I don't be quiet, trying to defend my innocence. How many times has that happened to an African-American man? out on the road somewhere? That's a question I like to ask somebody. It had happened to me again. Maybe about 4 years later. It happened to me in my senior year of high school. And I just happened to be, I was up on Briarcliff. For those who are familiar with North DeKalb, I'm up there around that area where used to be Open Campus High School. And police coming to a situation, there was a bunch of teenagers standing around getting ready to get in our cars, getting ready to head home. And again, the police is wanting to search us for some unknown reason, saying that we meet the description of somebody just committed a crime. We just walked out of school. All of us have been together for the last 4 hours. Nobody, everybody's like, even the white kids saying, no, they ain't did anything. They've been in school all day. Police threatening them, tell them, hush, be quiet, putting us all on the ground. So over time, I've learned that, wow, it doesn't do me any good whether or not I'm a criminal or not a criminal. Every time I have an interaction with the police, it seems to be negative. Now, I've had positive experiences with police, but the negative ones outweigh the positive ones. Then I have sons, and I've watched them have interactions with police, one in particular, where I watched the police slam my son, one of my sons, back out when we were living here in LaGrange. And when I went to ask why, he was involved in an incident. Son had been in the house all day. He just came outside sitting on the stoop. We was living in Metal Terrace Apartments at the time. Had want to get an argument. Just happened, I happened to call the police department, talk to the supervisor. Told him I need for him to act like he got some sense. Because my son just walked out of the door, and unless he got some photographic evidence, so my son needs to be treated like he's innocent until he's proven guilty. He hadn't been did anything provocative, hadn't said anything to you, but you just grab it and snatch it. Again, I have anxiety every time I come across police. Why? Because the police, some of them, they are good cops out there who do their job, who serve and protect and understand that we as citizens have constitutional rights. There are some out there who think they're at war with the citizens. And I understand that it's a dangerous job, and you come across, there's a lot of confrontational situations you'll come across. But the police in the United States of America are there to serve and protect and to help defend the Constitution of the United States. That's point blank, period. That's the end of that story. If we're at war with the police, then I understand why some of my conservative friends are arming themselves. Because if there's an actual war going on and we don't know about it yet, we have a sovereign right as men to defend ourselves. But nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to go there. We want to be able to trust the police to do their job. We don't want to be scared when they come into our neighborhood. And we want them, when they come to deal with the problems that are going on, or just patrolling the field study, that we not going to take a shot at them. How many times have we had here in America, and I just seen a YouTube video of this just the other day, where there was a white man, and I'm not trying to make this a race issue, but it is. A white man standing on the street with an AR-15, yelling and screaming, parading up and down the street, and the police actually took the time to talk this individual down and get his weapon. Whereas in every case of an African-American being shot down the street unarmed, they thought they saw a weapon. Yet somebody's like, but in these cases, they saw a weapon and decided to talk themselves down. Why? I got my theories on this. Are you scared to shoot somebody who actually has a gun? That's where I'm going. Are you scared to shoot somebody that actually has a gun? It's a lot easier to shoot a target that's not going to shoot back. That's simple. But in each and every occasion that I've seen different videos of these type of incidents, when a weapon is already seen, they go in there. But when they think they see one, they unload. Why don't you talk then? Son, I think I see a weapon. Can you please put your hands up so I can clearly see them? Can you lay down on the ground? They got tasers. Tase the jokers. And we know we got people with some of these unauthorized tasers they're doing. But we have to sit here and come up with some reasonable, there got to be some reasons here why there's a difference in the way people are treated by our public servants. It just doesn't take place. Police, you can go into any government office, and you have people in there who want to treat people differently. And I understand that people don't have to like anybody, but you don't have the right to discriminate. And this is an issue every time anyone wants to bring up the race issue, particularly since an African-American, we're accused of being racist. But as I said time and time again, we live the experience. We live this everyday experience of what we know people do treat us differently. Not saying, and by no means am I saying that every person that I come across that is not black is racist. Not saying that. What I'm saying is there are people in the United States of America who do not like black folks. And they don't like black folks, and they have no intention of treating them like they're equal. Some of these people are in power. Some of these people have money. Some of these people are wealthy. And some of these people have power and influence. And when you have power and influence, you don't have to, the person next to you doesn't have to have the same feeling. All they have to do is feel what you're going to do if you don't walk their walking. That's what is that few is influence. That few, like I said, right now, a rotten apple will ruin the whole barrel. We got some rotten apples. And there's races on both sides. In all ethnicities, there are races. There are black races, there are white races, there are Asian races. There are races all over through the American fabric. It is our job for those of us who are not racist to put these people in check. Because if they don't, we're going to continue to have this conversation where we can make it real easy. The government don't have to get involved. The citizens do. Start telling people when they say something that's out of whack, you need to calm that down. If we have elected officials who you know hold these feelings, stop electing them. Unless you feel the same way they do, then you're just as guilty. If you work for an employer, it's time to shut. You know, capitalism says that let's walk. You got the right. You ain't got to work for them. We'll shut them down. We'll keep them out of business. If that's the game they want to play, let racism hurt their pockets. But we're scared, America, scared of actually having the American dream. We're scared. We're scared that we speak up, stand up, go to the ballot boxes, and vote the way that will reflect the way we believe that something negative is going to happen. And why do we feel this way? Because it's happening right now. In 2008, we elected Barack Hussein Obama to be president of the United States. And the people who are against him have done everything they can to obstruct and sabotage the American way. They've attempted to say they use the Constitution. They've attempted to use the Holy Bible. They've attempted to use the Quran. They've attempted to use anything they can get their hands on that can possibly influence somebody to obstruct this man. Why? Because if we do it again, they're going to show us what will happen. Don't you do it again. Same thing they did to slaves. You take the strongest one, you break him. Those slaves will come in line. That's exactly what's going on right now, America. You need to get an understanding of that. And Ferguson brought it to our attention once again. Now, I don't agree with rioting and looting. Those are people who are taking advantage of a situation. They should be dealt with by the law. But when you have policemen threatening reporters and threatening citizens because they're recording the images of what's going on, we got a problem. If we can't disseminate information in America, well, shoot, just blow the first, screw the Second Amendment, blow the first one straight out of the water. And there's so many attempts in which to limit the First Amendment. It's just crazy. Because people don't want you to know what's going on. Education opens the mind. It's a problem, America, and we need to deal with it. And we need to deal with it quickly. Because if we don't, it's going to rip the fabric of our country apart. And the vast majority of Americans are people who don't have a prejudiced heart. They don't have a prejudiced bone. They just want to live the American dream. And that's freedom, liberty with equal opportunity. Equal opportunity is the key to that, everybody. Equal opportunity is knowing that when you walk out the front door, you as an American citizen do not have to worry about being treated any differently than any other American citizen. That if you pay your taxes, you were born in this nation, you've been given a birthright, and that no one ought to even think that they have a reason to treat you differently, regardless of race, sex, or sexual orientation, or religion. And we might not even necessarily want to call it prejudice. We might just want to sit there and really talk about the fact that we just got the prejudice, and when it comes to racism, we just might just have a problem with disliking people who don't think the way we do. And that needs to stop, because our country was founded by people who were running from intolerance. They were running from intolerance. We got to do better. Secondly, we got to hold our people accountable. When I say our people accountable, I'm talking about whatever racial group you come from, your community. You got to hold your own people accountable. African Americans, we need to do better in our community. All of us don't. No one's perfect. Everybody has their issues, but we have to do better. It's time that we stop wanting to live our lives like a reality show. It's time that we stop all the negative things that we are doing and get our stuff together. We can't live the American dream if we're not positioned to take part in it. We got to do better. That means register to go vote. That means those of us who are trying to game the system, who are bringing negative light to the rest of us, you need to stop. We need to start making better decisions about how we handle our personal business. We're better than that. Our grandparents and our great-grandparents always told us we had to be 5 to 6 times better in this country, and we need to start living like that again. And with that, I'm done with that. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back in a second. Okay, I'm back. This is Scout Smith with Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith. The last 15 minutes we were sitting there talking, I was giving a rant about race in America. But in the next 15 minutes, I really want to sit down and talk to you about this perpetual war that we seem to keep ourselves in and the rise of ISIS. A year and a half ago, President of the United States kept his campaign promise, and he removed the last of the troops from the nation of Iraq. We expect many, many years there, nation building, attempting to install some form of democratic government there, which has not worked. And this is not the fault of the president. It's not the fault. But it is the fault of American policy. And we've had a policy that we followed for almost 3 decades now when dealing with the Middle East that has failed. We attempt to try to go in there and play God in the Middle East. We go in there, we prop up governments, we take down governments, we give aid to those we like, and that flip-flops from time to time. If a rebel group pops up and we don't like the guy in power at the time, we give them weapons and money, and it always seems to turn around back on us. We look back at the 79 invasion by the Soviets of Afghanistan. The United States government funded and armed the Mujahideen. Mujahideen, over time, evolved into Al-Qaeda. They thought they had a religious duty to protect their own. So in 1990, when Saddam Hussein invaded Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda wanted to defend Saudi Arabia. They felt a sacred duty to do so. They were told, nope, you can't do that. The United States is going to come in here and defend us. That offended them. But the Saudis and the world community said, well, we're going to let the United States come in and we're going to do that. And we all supported that effort. Why? Because we needed to stop Saddam Hussein. We needed to eject him from Kuwait. It was not right, which I still agree with that today. It was not right for us to go for Saddam Hussein to go into Kuwait and take away try to take by force what he wanted. Shoot, if he really wanted to be Kuwait that bad, they could negotiate it. He probably wouldn't have got anything, but at least he would try to be civilized about it. But Al-Qaeda was offended by that, and that leads to why they wanted to attack America. If you read the 9/11 Commission's report, it's in there. That's what the Al-Qaeda was pissed about. They was pissed about America being on their show and them being rejected, and they felt like they could show the rest of the world that they were capable of defending by being able to strike at us. If you can take down the guy that everybody's looking to defend it, then you are capable of doing the job. And we got, and we've been in a fight with them. We finally got them underfoot. So we come to Syria. Just this time last year, everybody, mama, daddy, and the conservative side was talking about, let's arm ISIS. Let's arm the Syrian rebels to get rid of Assad. Now we're ready to help Assad get rid of ISIS. We beat the bullet on that one because we had a president who was willing to stand and say, nope, we're not going to get into this one. We're not going to do that. We're not getting involved. And a lot of people accuse us, say, well, now we got to get involved. If there's credible intelligence out there that ISIS is going to attack the United States of America, let's crush them. But just going over there so we can defend our economic interests and our foreign policy interests, playing imperialism, an imperialistic playbook from the early 20th century and the late 19th century. We keep playing those type of games, trying to draw lines on maps that don't make sense on the ground. We're going to continue to find ourselves constantly at war. If they attack us, we go in there and we wipe them out. I'm supportive of the president and his efforts to go in and take care of the humanitarian issues to defend the American troops that we still have on the ground there and hold them back. Don't know if I'm ready to go back to war again. As an American just sitting there watching relatives, friends deploy times over and over again, and we're not having decisive victory. Something has to change. We got to really think about this before we do it. Do we let them attack us first and then take the bloody nose and then go back? No, we don't do that. But we have to decide whether or not we really want to invest in going back into the Middle East with troops. As a military veteran, I know air power can't handle it all. You can't win anything with just air power. But if we're going to use air power, then we have to use it smartly. We have to bag the Peshmerga and the Iraqi forces, which we just spent billions of dollars training. They, every time they get confronted with something, dropping their rifles and running. That if they don't continue to do that, then we wasted a lot of money. And something needs to be done about that. There needs to be some type of investigation because if American troops trained them, they should be ready to stand and fight. Something wasn't done right, because they should be fighting for themselves. This ain't the first time this has happened. When we left Vietnam, Vietnamese troops have been trained and advised, and they dropped their weapons and ran. My question is it really American troops are training, or is it private companies training? That question needs to be answered. Who was doing the training? Now, I know we may have been supervising, but who was doing the actual training? Because, you know, we're spending billions of dollars given to paramilitary companies to go over there and do some of that work for us? Did they do their jobs? Because now we might have to have American men and women go over there and fix the mistakes. That question needs to be asked. Iraq, Syria, the Middle East, we got to be careful. We have to be very careful with dealing with that. These people have been fighting, these nations, these ethnic groups have been fighting each other before that was even in America. I was reading the article today on Wahhabism, and how that sect of belief in Islam has been around before the European set foot in the New World. This is an ingoing fight between Sunnis and Shiites. It's been happening since the days of the Prophet Muhammad. So we, the young American nation, don't come in here and just fix this. We have a hard time dealing with our own ethnic divisions, to be able to go and deal with somebody else's ethnic division. Maybe if we can show how to live as a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multiracial nation, then we would have more credibility on the nation, on the global stage. But how are we going to go tell everybody, I got to get along when we can't get along? It all comes again to how we selling and living the American dream. Something has to change. We cannot continue that. It's just not going to work. It's not going to work. We, as a nation, have to pay more attention to our foreign policy and make sure that our foreign policy reflects who we are as a people. And it may be doing that already, but if it is, we have a problem. Because what American foreign policy says is that if it makes dollars, it makes sense. If it's a threat to our economic stakeholders, then it makes sense. If we are defending one of our multinational conglomerates in their interest, it's all good. We will spend billions of dollars. There are places that we should have had our hand into a long time ago if we was going to follow this foreign policy that we've been following. And we've only in the last 20 years seen two of those situations bear out. Our intervention in Bosnia, in the Balkans, which you see we didn't ever really put combat troops on the ground. We put stabilization troops, but there was never a push for Americans actually going there fighting. But we did something because it was the right thing to do. We attempted to do it in Somalia, but we wasn't ready to go the whole way, because really there was no economic interest for us to be in Somalia. It was the right thing to do, but were we really willing to die for the right thing to do? We went in there, got our nose bloodied at the Battle of Mogadishu, which was a victory, a major victory for us. The American military was the Battle of Mogadishu. And the military men on the ground said, hey, we need armor to be able to deal with this situation. We need a more robust. And we got scared and we pulled out. Now, Somalia is a failed nation state, and we're still dealing with the ramifications of that, with Somali piracy, which we don't hear a whole bunch about until somebody takes a ship, but those things are still taking place. And we still have problems throughout that section of the world, the Horn of Africa, which is directly tied to the situation in the Middle East. Because we have insurgencies of Islamic extremists fighting all over the place. And we also have that same thing taking place in West Africa. Now, my question is, then, oil is involved.
But we hadn't got deep into that. That's a question. I would love somebody to answer. What is the strategic reason as why we haven't went after Boko Haram? We got special forces on the ground, but then why is there not a carrier battle group off the coast of Nigeria? Why is there not military forces? We have an Africa command that's not even stationed in Africa. It's in Germany. I mean, so, you know, if I'm wrong about that, somebody please text me and say, but last I read that the African command was not in Africa. The headquarters was not. And I'm sure there's an African nation somewhere where we could put a base of people, even if it was in Johannesburg somewhere that was probably friendly to the United States. But we have a lot of foreign policy issues that we're not taking seriously. And it has nothing to do with who's in the White House at the time. It is just a series of decisions that have been made to be standard over time. We don't negotiate with terrorists. The Middle East is a concern to us, and we know it's because of energy dependence. And there's a quick way of getting rid of that, and that's to take and develop some of these non-fossil fuel energy sources that we have, solar, wind, electric cars. If you want to stop them, cut them off of their pocket. Let's stop using oil, point blank, period. Well, that's the biggest foreign policy coup. But why we aren't doing that? Because American companies or companies that are based in America have large stakes in, Americans have large stakes in, are not wanting to make that change over. We can find ourselves, again, developing that technology, developing it to a point that we become the superpower in energy providing once again. We cut out the middleman. We get rid of the people that are causing us problems. Let's cut them off. Let's see if that's the case. Because if that's the case, if they're going to fight us, they're going to fight us, then they're going to try to destroy our wind towers and our solar processing plants and our hydroelectric. They'll be trying to destroy that to keep their money. If hit them in the pocket, we'll see what the real priorities is. Well, they are. And with that, I'm going to take another break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk about the races here in Georgia. This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith. Okay, this is Scott Smith with Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith. Woo-wee! Down here in Georgia, we got an interesting political season taking place. For the last 4 years, Georgia has been, you know, Democrats and Republicans in Georgia have been going back and forth, and the Republicans think they had a lockdown on the state of Georgia, but I can promise you this, that is not the case. You know, it was originally said that Georgia probably won't turn, didn't have a chance of turning blue until 2018 or maybe even 2020. But I do believe that the time has come that Georgia will elect Democrats to statewide offices. And I'm going to tell you why. A lot of Republicans and conservatives will not admit this, but we just have better candidates on our side of the aisle. At the top of our ticket, Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter, very honorable people who understand Southern politics, who understand Georgia. As a Democrat, I'm going to say this. I'm not a liberal. I'm a progressive. They're not one and the same. Liberal progressives don't exist. It's either one of the two. And in Georgia, you either got to be a progressive or you got to be a conservative Democrat. Now, people don't want to admit the conservative Democrats still exist, but they do. And they exist down in rural Georgia. And I've talked to a couple here in the last couple of weeks as we've been out knocking on doors and canvassing down in West Georgia, and they've been voting Republican because nobody acts like they understand what's going on in Georgia. But I can tell you Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter do, and a lot of the candidates that we have up and down our ticket, they understand that. They understand that Georgia's a little bit more complex than people would like to think of, and that we have to we have to understand those complexities. You got great candidates like Connie Stokes. We got Doreen Carr. We have Liz Johnson. We have Valerie Wilson. That Fabulous Five. These are great women, very intelligent, well-qualified, capable of leading Georgia forward. And the only thing that the Republicans can say when it comes to our candidates, all they can say is Obama. They can't tell us why our policies won't work. All that kid constantly doing is trying to fire up that base by saying Obama. Georgia deserves better. As if we you know, the Democrats remember that slogan, Georgia deserves better. We deserve better than a group of politicians who are constantly trying to get people riled up for the wrong reason. A group of politicians who all they can say is wrong is that we happen to belong to the same party as the president that they dislike. But guess what? This president was elected twice, not only by the Electoral College, but by the popular vote. And he almost took Georgia. So 48% of Georgians supported this man to be president of the United States, then Georgia is not as red as people think it is. We are a very deep shade of purple that is prepared to go blue. All we got to do is understand our people. Jason Carter, Michelle Nunn understand our people. The polls show they're constantly shifting people. We got to go out there and we have to talk to the people directly. Listen to what they got to say. Because a lot of people are prepared to come and vote for Democrats in this election. One, because there's a lot of criminals on their side, unethical politicians, people who are, and this is at the state level. I know people can come and they can talk about what's going on in DeKalb County, and they can talk about what's going on in some lower level, but guess what? We're taking care of that. Those people will never be running an elected office on the state level. We don't have that. We have people in the state government who are running around campaigning that they are conservatives, they're constitutional conservatives, and they can't even follow the constitution of this state. They're looking for loopholes, and they can't even look us straight in the eye and tell us the truth. They're trying to game the system. Their whole thing is to make as much money as they can while they can make it and screw Georgia in the process. We got a governor who won't accept Medicaid expansion, but take money on defending ethics charges. We got a attorney general that refuses to enforce the law equally. We got an insurance commissioner who doesn't think that it's important for Georgians to be insured. We got to do something about this. We're not paying very much attention to going out there finding these voters who are tired of this. They want ethical government. I do believe that we have Democrats that's on the ballot this time around that can bring us ethical government. I can debate that all day with anybody who want to do it. I'm not going to do it today. But that's a part of how this show is going to operate from now on. I want you to come in and tell me how you feel. I want Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, I want you to call in and tell me how you feel. But I can tell you this, November will be a historic election. I think I personally and a lot of Democrats feel as this is going to be the time. We have the opportunity. We have the positioning to go out there and make it happen. We need to reach out a little farther because there are some folks who are confused in the margins right now. They're confused whether or not their conservative leanings that they have disqualify them from voting for Democrats. But I can tell you that this is a big tent. It is a wide spreading umbrella. That blue steel Democrats in the Democratic Party, those who are gun owners, they are Democrats over here under this big tent who are fiscally conservative but socially progressive. Most Georgians that I've been talking to in the last couple of weeks really could care about what anybody does in their bedroom, who they love, or anything of that nature. There are those who think that the war on drugs is crazy and that marijuana legalization needs to take place. Even if we just start with medical marijuana, they think that needs to take place. We have Georgians who believe that there need to be some comprehensive immigration reform. And I've met a whole bunch of them that think that we need to have Medicaid expansion here in Georgia. And I've met a whole lot of them that think there's a bunch of crooks, lies and thieves in Georgia state government. And I got a lot of them that believe that Michelle Nunn can go to Washington, D.C. and be a big bridge builder. Have a lot of them that believe that Jason Carter is exactly what we need. I got a lot of them that believe that Liz Johnson will bring credibility and ethics to the insurance commissioner's office. I got them that believe that Robin Schiff will help bring jobs and grow jobs here in Georgia. I got those who believe that Valerie Wilson will get us a top-notch education here in Georgia, and that Connie Stokes will preside over the General Assembly in ways that no one has done since the Democrats have been in power. And that Doreen Carter is going to go in there and straighten out that Secretary of State's office. You will get your business license on time. Voting will be straightened out. We got Daniel Blackman, who will give us a voice on the Public Service Commission. Greg Hick, who will go up there and enforce the law. And Tommy Irvin, Chris Irvin, excuse me, but see, that's how that goes right there. And we need to remember that. Chris Irvin, we're sleeping, folks. Because Chris Irvin, who's running for Agriculture Commissioner, is going to go in there. He has an understanding of rural Georgia. People are coming back telling me walking around in different political functions in rural Georgia are sitting there talking about, they excited about Chris Irvin. They remember who his grandfather was as insurance commissioner. As ag commissioner. They're remembering what a great job he did and how people respected him. And everybody knows the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. We need to get excited about that. Because, see, a lot of us, we concentrate on things that happen in the metro, but safe food and small farms surviving and rural, all the things that take place in rural Georgia that falls under the umbrella of agriculture are not getting the attention that they need to pay to big agribusiness coming to Georgia, and they are killing Georgia agriculture. Think about all the little things we had, like the little peanut processing plant and all the safety regulations coming. If Chris Irvin was the Agriculture Commissioner, I promise you that wouldn't be happening because he's going to take care of business. We got a lot of great candidates. We need to go out there and support them. We need to go to work, people. I'm not saying this just because I'm a Democrat. I'm saying this because I'm a good Georgian. I'm a good American. And these are good people. And I know that they're going to govern and represent all the people of the state of Georgia. And Michelle Nunn will go to the United States Senate representing Georgia as well as any American could. She will go up there and do the job, build the bridges, make it possible for the American dream to prosper again. Because at the end of the day, most of us Americans are agreeing on where the issues are really important. We know we want to see a strong economy. We want our children educated, and we know we need to be healthy. All of these people are prepared to do that job and do it in a way that represents all Georgia. Promise you, we elect Democrats in November, Georgia will become a more prosperous state. It won't just be a magazine that says Georgia's number one. We as Georgians will be saying we're number one. We will feel like we're number one. We again will be the Empire State of the South. We will progress. We will grow. Georgia is always on our mind. And Democrats know that Georgia deserves better. So remember, November 4th, that's the day. You need to get out and vote. Early voting starts on October 13th. You need to get out there, get people to the polls. Got to get them to vote. If you're registering, continue to register. But we've registered a lot of voters in the last couple of years. Now it's time to go get those folks and get them to the polls. And this is Scott Smith. This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith. And I'll be back in just a moment. This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith, and I'm back. And in these last couple of minutes, I'm gonna give y'all a kind of an idea of what's gonna be going on. We're moving, as you noticed, we had been. When we first started off, our show was about 30 minutes long, and we were broadcasting at around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're moving to 6 o'clock. Trying to get into the prime time. We're also gonna start. We're gonna have some guest hosts and regular. Interviews, and we're gonna be doing some neat things, and we're gonna be taking in calls, and sometimes we may even be calling you. So if y'all got your phone number and know that you ain't doing nothing, you might get a phone call. We might call some folks that we need to talk to. Gonna be doing some interviews. Gonna be following these races very closely as we get into November. We want to make sure that we're giving information out. We want to make sure that we keep you in tune with what's going on in the South. Not necessarily in the South, but what's going on from a Southern perspective. There's a lot going on outside the perimeter. There's a lot of stuff going on inside the perimeter. We're going to bring it to you. We're going to bring Georgia news and politics from a traditional perspective. As the show is called, it's Down South and Dirty. We're going to be real. We're going to keep it open. You can all take us. If you call in and you want to go crazy, because I want folks to understand that there's crazy people out there. I'm not going to cut you off unless I don't tell you you got a time period you need to operate in, and then disrespect the rules and say you're crazy within the time limit. But other than that, we want to have an open show. We want to be able to talk. We want to keep it real. We want to be able to make sure that you, the listener, are interacting as much as possible. We're going to start developing chats so people can, if you can't call in but you're somewhere where you can text us, you can bring in, you can send us that information, you ask us questions, you're able to call in, and we can handle a lot of calls. We can handle enough calls. We can kind of even do a town hall session. So just want you to be, and we'll be doing a couple of those virtual town halls where we'll be talking to folks all across Georgia and kind of getting an idea of how you feel. And we'll be doing specials as events start taking place. We will have correspondents who will call in from different parts of Georgia letting us know what's going on there. So I look forward to expanding the show and giving you what you have. So if you got feedback, you send it to me at scoutsmith@live.com or scoutsmith2014@gmail. Send me questions. If you got show ideas, send them to me. We're not claiming to be political experts over here, but we are talking to the regular everyday folks in the street. We're not coming here to pontificate from a pie. This is a grassroots operation, grassroots media. And we want to have a grassroots flavor. So I want the regular Joe to call in. And I also want some of our experts to call in. I want you to come in and be guests on the show. Because if you can explain to the people what they need to know, we want to educate. An educated constituency, voter base, is a voter base that is informed and will make good decisions. And when we have good voting takes place, that we had a lot of informed voters turnout is high, then we start getting the type of government we deserve. And with that being said, I want to wish all of you a great week ahead, and I'll be talking to you again next Sunday at 6 o'clock. This is Scout Smith on Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith, and all of you have a good evening.